Good evening, everyone, and welcome to our regular Monday stream. It is 7 p.m. As always, we are live.
Yes.
We are not late.
We will never be late.
We are never late. People were very impressed that we were so prompt in our last stream that it is literally exactly an hour to the second, which was not intentional, by the way.
Yes, it was. What do you mean?
As people filter in, I will remind them that we are somehow still monetized. This
That's
is,
because we love the nation of Israel.
yes, it is. This is also for the, I guess, for the VOD people too. Because we, as everyone knows, YouTube doesn't let people know about a video until it's already been going on for 5 minutes. So we're still able to take your shekels, if you're willing to give them. I've been trying to set up an entropy thing, but I've been struggling a little bit. I think I've just been misunderstanding how it works. So the best way to send us money still, as a temporary measure, where YouTube doesn't take a cut, is just via PayPal. But you can do the whole super chat, super sticker,
Yes.
which very few people use. Or you can become a member. We still have members available. I can see Not Sure there in the chat. A shout out to Not Sure, who's been a member for quite a while. Same with John Morton. I see you in the chat too. You've both managed to get the Cookie Monster sad cat, which means you've been
Yes.
there for quite some time.
But
So
no,
well done.
thank you for those who turn up to the streams and more specifically the members, because it is ultimately your feedback and support that keeps us doing these streams. And I think part of the quality of them and the polished sort of nature that they've had recently has been because people have really enjoyed the direction we've been going with them. And
Yes.
at no point has anyone said, don't stop doing more of this, so we're just going to keep hacking away at it, really.
Your feedback does affect these streams, especially if it's constructive feedback. We don't listen to people who just like do the whole it's like the internet with anonymity, the old cartoon, just the guy going like shit cock. We don't
Instructions not clear enough, deck stuck in ceiling
so,
fan.
yes, very much so. But no, we constructive feedback, a lot of you guys contact me either on Discord, or you contact my unpaid media intern on Twitter, or you just leave a decent comment, which I try and make sure everybody's gets seen. Because even though I've set it not to, YouTube still like catches half the comments and doesn't display them until I manually approve them.
Yeah, so
Great
go
process.
in there and do your dance and summon the algorithm gods and whatnot.
Yeah, someone just like you got that streaming license, which is a
Oh, feedback. Well, that isn't very elite theory pilled. It's the illusion. It's the illusion of feedback, you
No,
see.
we filter your views.
Yeah,
We
just like Ofcom.
yes, just like Ofcom, which is a decent lead-in. I will say I think I forgot to get it up on screen, but in the links down below, there are still tickets available for Nomos Manchester 2.
There are indeed.
Nomos Boogaloo. No, it's Nomos times Mises, actually. As we've explained in our announcement video, we have a hookup with the Mises Institute, which is quite exciting. If you are in the UK and able to get to Manchester for the 27th of May with the main event, I'm afraid all of the early bird tickets are now sold out for the Friday dinner with us and the other speakers. And there will be more announcements of who is speaking and some more of the kind of theming and the thrust of what we'll be doing later. But we have sold quite a number without that, so do book that if you
It's going to be quite a busy rest of the month, actually, for us. We've got a number of guest streams coming up.
Yes, we do. The latter part of March is going to be basically guest central. I've tried we try to go through kind of phases of doing bits and pieces where we're kind of going through this arc of streams right now, but we will have for the last half of March a decent amount of guest appearances
Yes.
both on our channel and on other people's channels. So
Because
that's yeah.
this will be a two-part series at one point, because there is other, if you're wanting to watch us this evening go through Ofcom standards and be like, wow, these are ridiculous, that'll be coming in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, this is mostly just to do with Ofcom, how it came about, and its remit. We'll be going to some of the more functional aspects of Ofcom on a future stream. This is more just a lot of people aren't particularly familiar with Ofcom. It's one of those weird sideline things people don't think about, but it's about to become even more important.
Yes. And as well as we like to do with our streams, we would like to leave useless assumptions at the door.
Yes.
So whilst we go through this and we discuss Ofcom, its remit, how that remit's changed by all sorts of different policies. Do not look at it through the lens of my free speech.
Yes.
Think more about how an aspect of bureaucracy is weaponized towards total narrative control.
That is what this is. It is really about the narrative control more than anything. As a final piece of our kind of plugging, I will say if you do want to keep seeing these, do interact with these videos in some way. Like, subscribe, comment, blah blah blah. I know it's cringe YouTuber shite, but it is the only way that these still get seen.
Yes.
And quite honestly, since we've been encouraging people to do that, we have seen quite a large uptick in visibility. So that really is one of the only, if you don't want to support us monetarily, that does actually help. As cringe and terrible as all that stuff is. But anyway, we will stop waffling because it's been more than 5 minutes now. And we will actually properly get into the meat and potatoes of Ofcom. As always, as well, if you're watching the VOD, there will be a full set of sources and notes down below, as there is with pretty much all of our streams.
Yeah, and then at some point in the notes, we'll probably also make it into an expanded Substack post, but all in good
Yes,
time.
and they get posted as a community post too, generally. So we try and make sure that people, don't just trust us. We encourage people to read along and do their own
Go
research.
find the things that we might have missed, please.
Yes, because I've had a few people come to me and be like, "Well, I followed this link here and it leads here," and not kind of a, "Well, you're terrible, you've missed this," but I've had a lot of good tips.
Oh wow, the rabbit hole really goes this deep.
Yes. First of all, though, we need to talk about where Ofcom came from.
It's essentially a wrap-up of a number of other bodies that we'll get to an announcement. Because everything we've got here isn't slightly in chronological order, but it makes sense as we build it up.
Yeah.
So it starts off with the Office of Communications Act, which Office of Communications is Ofcom.
Yes.
And the Act itself was brought in 2002, of course, by our Lord and Saviour Tony Blair.
This is another Blair institution. We keep hammering this point home, but all of what are considered like the furniture fixtures of the British establishment, almost all of them were either brought in, reformed, or renamed and re-remitted by Blair.
Yes. I mean, in a certain sense, it seems that at the time, Ofcom was sort of framed as, oh, well, it's just a nice packaging of other bits of policy and, making things run more efficiently by having one central bureau control these bits. And it
Yes.
sort of becomes this formless extra layer on top of bureaucracy that already existed. Until you have the Communications Act of 2003.
Yes.
Which then gives Ofcom its teeth.
We don't have that here in the notes.
No, we don't, but I would sort of presume everyone would at least know about the Communications Act 2003. It was the one that Dank has been charged
Yeah, he
under.
fell foul of it. Was
It
the
is the prototypical sort of hate speech online framework, and it is the sort of thing I think we would have to treat entirely on a stream on its own. But
Yes.
for the moment, it's important just to understand that 2001, Ofcom was announced by the Queen in a speech which we'll get to, where she's describing it as a super regulator.
Yeah.
Then the Office of Communications Act 2002, I believe we've got another section of it as one of the links here.
You have highlighted here section two, which is one of the sections that stood out to me when I did some research on this a number of months ago. It's the initial function of Ofcom. It shall be the function of Ofcom, subsection 5, to do such things as they consider appropriate for facilitating the implementation of securing and modification of any relevant proposals about the regulation of communications. Full stop. They are the
So the
communications regulator.
yeah the whole this whole section is like a roundabout thing that says, well, here's all the types of regu or all the types of communication they can regulate by their own standards. Now, of
Yes.
course, at this time, Ofcom doesn't have any standards,
No.
hence why the 2003 Communications Act is so important to all this, because it almost seems as if this was just a precursory step. You have to create the one body so it can apply the one
I
standard.
would say the way round it was done is also very, very telling. The Ofcom was created and given a remit before anyone knew what the rules would be.
Yes.
Which is very much a, you have to read the bill to know what's in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an extremely calculated political move. And I believe if the Communications Act had come before Ofcom, Ofcom would have been a lot more controversial.
Yes.
It's a great Blairite, a classic Blairite manoeuvre in which you invent an extremely boring, generic organisation that does nothing.
Mm.
And then you incrementally, or even here, in one fell swoop, give it enormous power.
Yes.
In a way that is difficult for the normal member of the public to understand.
Mm.
Because the initial news they got about it is, this is a boring, toothless, functionary organisation.
Yeah, I mean, I've got a note of it here. Just, you know, we can look at this from, you know, 20 years ahead of the Communications Act. That, in a sense, Blair's standards in the 2003 Communications Act are constantly reinforced by media by an unelected therapeutic body aimed at fairness and harm reduction. Because that's, as we will get into them in a previous, our next part, that is the standards that Ofcom has operated under and is the standards in the Communications Act. And as we carry on further and follow how Ofcom has developed, these are also the standards in the Tory policy that are being used to reorientate Ofcom towards their demands. Unlike the BBC of old, there is almost zero scope for placing lewdness or vulgarity, which was what the censor boards and stuff like that used to be there for.
Yes.
So it only really exists now to regulate content through an ideological lens.
It seems to be the upset, quote-unquote, an offence in certain ways has become the remit of Ofcom. We'll talk about it a little bit throughout, but there's a great podcast where Ofcom talks about the fact that through partly their own cultural manipulation, swearing, nudity, what were considered kind of, you know, the video nasties of the 80s, no longer register on people. It's just background noise.
Yeah.
Like, sex, violence, and swearing used to be, you know, very Mary Whitehouse, but it is almost unheard of that they receive a complaint about that thing now, partly because of what they have done.
But yeah, if we go on to the next link we've got there, I think this is the one actually from, look at that, the vintage BBC website.
I love that they keep the archived versions in the same format as not to break them.
Look at that image as well.
Oh my god, that's like an American stock image, because we didn't really get the as many of the fronted and the slide phones.
Yeah.
The Americans were quite far behind. They all had the external aerials way into the mid-2000s.
But this is when the plan for Ofcom was originally announced during the Queen's speech in 2001. And I think if we scroll down, it does actually say that it will be a super regulator or something.
Yeah, it's a consolidation of media regulation power. A bill to create a single regulator for the media and communications industries has been announced in the Queen's speech. The bill, which would establish Ofcom, is likely to be the most significant piece of media legislation since 1990.
It would be, yes, formally inheriting the duties that had previously been the responsibility of five different regulators: the Broadcasting Standards Commission, the Independent Television Commission, the Office of Telecommunications, Oftel, as they've listed here, the Radio Authority, and the Radio Communications Agency, which, yes, as we can sort of maybe have a discussion about later, doesn't just mean they're in charge of what you say on the radio, but literally the fact that you output a radio wave.
They are in charge. There's a very, very lofty statement.
Yes, I've got it somewhere. Ofcom is responsible for the management, regulation, assignment, and licensing of the electromagnetic spectrum in the UK.
Yeah, they literally control the licensing of EM waves. They are quietly an incredibly powerful organisation already.
Mm.
And they are only going to get more and more powerful. In fact, they have only got more and more powerful. They've got more powerful since we started doing these streams.
Mm.
Their remit is constantly expanding to an extreme degree. But it was, even at this early stage, it was kind of this brazen idea in the Blairite years of the Labour government will get a handle on these things.
Mm.
People forget that during this period, especially kind of like peak post 9/11, pre-Iraq war, Blair was at the height of his powers.
Yes.
He was the managerialist. He was the manager.
We'll scroll down as well here. They have mentioned the fact that this is about, it's about business.
Yeah.
It's about bringing a new, modern, up-to-date, technically proficient, Office of Communications, so that they were not stuck with these fuddy-duddy censor boards, as it would have been framed at the time.
Yeah, but the government is postponed the publication of a broader draft communications bill, which would have addressed the issue of cross-media ownership, until the autumn 2002. Again, that's the political manoeuvre I'm talking about here. Senior independent TV chiefs have already contacted Downing Street to complain about the delay of publishing the bill. The delay has been caused by the complexity of the industry, blah, 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 speed of change of technologies, Department for Culture, Media and Sports.
But elsewhere, I'm pretty sure in that section of the Ofcom bill we were reading, they state, well, technology is changing too quickly just to be left in the hands of the media companies. Someone else has to step in to manage the technical proficiency, which is like peak Blair.
It is very, very peak Blair. But they go into the fact that this, we need a vision for the initial strategy. It was sold really as a way of decluttering the British media landscape, of making the British kind of film, or at least, not the film, but the television industry, the communications industry in general in Britain, bringing it into the 21st century and having this, wunderkind kind of technical organization that would underpin it all and would oversee it all and that would have a big theme in the Blair years was the joined-up approach.
Yes.
The national curriculum came front and centre. The joined-up approach of government was very much...
Well, that was one of the big arguments against a lot of grammar schools, was that they weren't joined up with the rest and that Ofsted had to come in and basically get rid of them all.
Well, you've also just kind of put the Wikipedia article here for Ofcom, just as an overview.
Mm.
We have found generally that a lot of the more quote-unquote neutral organisations like Ofcom tend to have pretty okay Wikipedia articles.
I suppose we could maybe, if we scroll down just now, it sort of consolidates the point that this is.
Yeah.
If we get to the, what's it called again? Here, I have the name of it. The Timeline of Communications Regulators section in the Wikipedia.
It's right here.
There we go. Here's all the different boards, all the different authorities. Because they go and say that it's these five ones in the previous article and on this Wikipedia page. But when you look at it, there's actually more than that, because it was the entities that existed before the 1990s. Independent Television Authority, Independent Broadcasting Authority, all these different bodies that were, as far as I'm aware at the time, in media bodies.
Yes, a lot of them were self-reporting.
These didn't exist to be censor boards. These existed to make sure that people who were working for their networks weren't making pornography or obscene content or anything like that sort of standard.
Well, it used to be, you talk about Spectrum, which is the one that was actually just responsible for frequency licensing.
Mm.
It was the whole idea was you had like separation of powers. The frequency licensor was separated from the content moderator because having your media licensor, the same body that was responsible for media standards, is a direct conflict of interest.
Yes.
That's part of the stuff that was missed in the shuffle of Ofcom. Ofcom is both judge, jury, and executioner when it comes to revoking licenses. Because it talks it down in all of its media. It talks down its ultimate power in all of its representative stuff. But Ofcom has the power, as we saw, and as we'll go through on the later stream with BitChute, it has the power to remove you from the marketplace at a moment's notice.
And that's not even the case of they're removing an individual person from a broadcast. That's a complete upending of the broadcaster, the actual service provider.
The big one here as well is the fact that you see that satellite TV used to have kind of, it was just part of the Independent Television Commission and Broadcasting Commission, Broadcasting Complaints Commission. There were all these different boards that was seen as messy bureaucracy. And Ofcom was meant, before its remit was even known, to consolidate these, modernise them, and quote-unquote bring them into the 21st century.
Yes.
And in doing so, it became kind of a censorship nightmare to many people. But that's not the route we're going down.
Mm.
And it's been quietly criticised by many for quite a while on those grounds. But Ofcom has largely been dormant in waving its big stick around. It is a very, very careful organization. And it is very related, as we've seen, with the way it was originally essentially descended from part of the BBC.
Yes.
Because, you know, those of you who are old enough to remember black and white television will know that the BBC was the only game in town for a long time. Well, and its veneer of neutrality is very similar to that of the BBC's.
Readers of the Substack page, if they have read my piece Representation, will remember that I quote a little bit from Peter Hitchens, who is then subsequently quoting one of the old BBC chairs at the time, who very openly admits that the only reason they could keep up even a hint or a notion of, you know, a standard of television programming that represented certain values was because it was a monopoly under essentially a government-appointed minister.
Yes.
And the moment that the BBC was given sort of independence in one sense and a different remit in another, all of a sudden the whole thing broke down and it basically became free reign to make whatever crap you wanted on it.
Yes, it did. And Ofcom's kind of absenteeism in many cases is responsible for the current state of British television. It's more about what Ofcom chooses not to enforce. Well,
maybe we should then get into, I don't know, maybe just some examples of, like, who's the current chair of Ofcom? I mean, the current chair of Ofcom wouldn't be a screaming example of exactly what you've just said now, would he?
Well, I was doing that as a bit of a lead-in. But as a promotional thing, do go and read, subscribe to Substack, guys. We do try and put stuff up there. There'll be some more stuff up there this week. I'm not quite sure what, but there will definitely be something by at least Thursday that I will have done.
Cool.
If not tomorrow, we'll see. I might be able to actually get something done in transit.
I'm busy doing other things and recording some other stuff, which people will see later on, probably next week. So,
yes, but we do try. You know, we have been trying and succeeding actually to keep up the kind of two pieces a week thing on the Substack.
Yeah.
So I will make sure that something goes out there. If not tomorrow, then on Thursday, we will at least have weekly content. But we prefer to have two pieces of content a week on the Substack. That's neither here nor there. Yeah, the current head of Ofcom is Lord Grade of Grade, is it? Lord Grade of Yarmouth.
Yes, or Michael Grade.
Yes, Michael Grade is the current head of Ofcom. And you found out some pretty interesting stuff about him.
Yeah, his father escaped a pogrom in Ukraine, and he never really spent much time with his mother. I mean, I think they even mention it here.
Yeah.
He was born in a Jewish show business family.
Jewish show business family.
Originally called Winogradsky. His father was a theatrical agent, Leslie Grade, and his uncles were the impresarios Lou Grade and Bernard Delfont. When he was 3 years old, his mother, Lynn Smith, left the family to conduct a relationship with wrestling commentator Kent Walton. Grade was brought up by his grandfather and only saw his non-Jewish mother once more as an adult. He was educated at Stowe School. So, not to make it all about this, but clearly this is a man that was brought up in a certain culture, and a showbiz culture. So it should be no surprise that when he became, you know, I think he was director of some element of the BBC, he worked in programming the ITV, and then of course when his stint, when he was put as the chair executive of Channel 4, you just sing it away at yourself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
When he was a chair executive of Channel 4, he was dubbed the pornographer in chief, which I think we have the next link on the row there.
Yeah, well, to impress the point further, he is definitely part of the British establishment. He is a lord born to a showbiz family, you know, impresario. Well,
he has essentially been made lord, consequently, after he became open about his support of the Conservative Party, for which he then received his chair as Ofcom position just afterwards.
Yes, but he, like I said, he's definitely someone who's been brought into the British establishment. He's from a particular background, let's say. He's from the background you would expect from a media mogul in many cases. But yeah, here it is. Michael Grade in line for peerage. Former BBC and ITV chairman understood to be likely to take Conservative whip in House of Lords. Amazing, isn't it? You have Labour imagined body that is brought into the function of the Conservative Party. And as we'll come to later, that is bizarre because of some of the rhetoric of David Cameron, specifically against the Quangos.
Yes.
If anyone remembers the previous eras of British politics, you may remember the Bonfire of the Quangos, which was an event that never happened under under David Cameron, in which he promised to get rid of all of these unelected bodies and then promptly made them all bigger. Yes. And more powerful and closer to the Tory party.
Yeah, I see people in chat asking what are Quangos. It's quasi non-governmental organizations, isn't it?
Yes. I think it is Quangos. Quasi non. Basically, they're like NGOs that have strong links to government.
Yes.
We don't talk about them anymore because that would actually bring too much out into the open.
It's called the public private partnership.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it is.
But I think it's somewhere through this.
Yeah, it is.
Agreed successfully argued for ITV's public service requirements to be reduced. However, he was chief executive of Channel 4, where he was famously dubbed Britain's pornographer in chief by the Daily Mail for presiding over a schedule that included sexually explicit programming. I think he was possibly one of the people that was responsible for basically bringing like softcore porn and like Euro trash and stuff like that to Channel 4 late at night.
I believe the term is wank fodder.
Probably.
People talk. He single-handedly reduced the snowiness on many VHSs. By changing the smut market in Britain. The smut market was no longer people hiring 80s films and getting timestamps from their weird video shop friend.
Yeah,
it did became like Channel 4 and Channel 5 past the watershed.
The nephew of showbiz legend Sir Lou Grade, he is already regarded by some as broadcasting royalty. But he's basically been the head of everything. Grade has also had a long and varied corporate career, chairing national lottery operator Camelot from 2002 to 2004. He remains chairman of a film studio business, Pinewood Shepperton.
So he's involved quite heavily in Pinewood Studios. Basically, he is Le Media Man.
Yes.
I don't know. I, as I said up there, trust you to research Ofcom and immediately found some kind of Jewish pornographer, but that's kind of by the by.
Then we've got the chief executive serving at the moment as well, who seems to just be like an out and out like career bureaucrat. I mean, just look at previously the permanent secretary of the Ministry of Housing, Communities and Local Government, and before that worked at HM Treasury, HM Revenue and Customs, and in the Cabot Office. She's a trustee of the Patchwork Foundation. Then, you know, all these just like nonsense NGO and civil service jobs. I think there's actually a bit towards the bottom of a Wikipedia here where it says that she's one of the highest. Scroll up, sorry, again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dawes was paid a salary of between £160,000 and £165,000 by DCLG, making her one of the 328 most highly paid people in the British public sector at the time.
I mean, it's not a lot by private sector standards, but it is a lot by, you know, like you said, public sector standards.
But it goes to show that this is someone who has been part of like the state furniture since 1989.
Oh, she's a hatchet.
She's never worked outside of that framework for the last 35 years nearly.
Well, the way I see it, if Grade is the media man, she is like the government hatchet.
Mm.
She is there to make sure that Ofcom is not an independent regulator.
And of course, what was the first thing that came up when I searched her name on Google?
What?
Well, the World Economic Forum link for her.
Of course it is. God, she looks a bit sour-faced in that one. Did something happen?
I didn't even like look for that. I just Googled her name and it was like the first thing that came up.
That's quite funny. Chief Executive Officer, Office Communications, Ofcom, yeah.
Also worked at Consumer Body, which, another Quango.
Yeah, and is a trustee of the Patchwork Foundation, which helps underrepresented young people get involved in democracy.
We helping Syrian four-year-olds get the vote.
I'm afraid I can't actually format this, because this is like a permanently mobile formatted thing. So it's just going to be on our stream a bit weird, I'm afraid.
But these are the people who are essentially like conservative establishment furniture. They are complete and utter jobbers, as far as I can tell.
Yes.
Which comes in total contrast to what you mentioned earlier on, which was the speech David Cameron gave in 2009, which we've got the Guardian article linked for there, where what's the title? Yeah, Tories would cut Ofcom power, says David Cameron. Media regulators' policy-making powers will be removed if Conservatives win the next election.
Never happened. Didn't happen. Well, they made it up.
Actually, it'll get worse. But I think we should go through maybe some of the stuff in here anyway, because it's just...
keep in mind earlier that, you know, what's he called? Grade was given a... He's the lead. He's the whip. He's the Tory whip.
Only a year after this.
Yeah. He's the Tory whip in the House of Lords. He's the head of Ofcom. A body that they promised to disempower. Politique.
David Cameron, the Conservative leader, said today that he would take away Ofcom's policy-making powers. But David Cameron?
Yeah.
It never had any. It was Tony Blair that made the policy that they enact. Yeah. It wasn't like he was going to turn around and rewrite the 2003 Communications Act.
No, it's basically an impossible feat to do by reforming Ofcom alone.
And cut back the communications regulator by a huge amount if his party wins the next year general election. Cameron told BBC Breakfast he planned to save taxpayers money by slimming down Ofcom, including axing its communications department and other public bodies. So he doesn't have an issue with the standards, it's that it costs too much.
Yeah.
Give Ofcom or give a new body the technical function of handing out the licences and regulating lightly the content that is seen on screens, he said. But it shouldn't be making policy, it should have its own communications department. The head of Ofcom, Ed Richards, has paid almost £500,000, Cameron said. We could slim this down a huge amount and save a lot of money for the taxpayers. Ofcom was established by Labour in the 2003 Communications Act.
No, it wasn't.
It wasn't. And formally took over responsibility for regulating the broadcasting telecom sector on 29 December that year, replacing the five bodies mentioned previously. The regulator has been heavily involved in the formulation of communications policy since then. Now, that's slightly true.
But only because of its, as we talked about, the separation of the office communications from its own remit in British law is incredibly important, because it makes it incredibly difficult to attack.
Here is something I should have maybe looked at more at the time, though.
Yeah.
Including the recent Digital Britain report.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't looked at this yet, but I can almost guarantee that Digital Economy Act, which we have talked about before and we'll talk about again in a moment, is probably a spin-off of this Digital Britain report.
I believe it influenced it, yes.
And from that we can see that there has been a, you know, more than decades-long process now with the Conservative Party working hand-in-glove with Ofcom to write out an entire regulation programme for the internet.
Digital Britain. Yes, it is.
But I'll just keep going here.
Yes.
Cameron will expand on his party's plan for cutting back on quangos and public bodies in a speech to the Reform think tank later today. This growth in the number of quangos and the scope of their influence raises important questions for our democracy and politics, he will say. Too many state action services and decisions are carried out by people who cannot be voted out by the public, by organisations that feel no pressure to answer for what happens in a way that is completely unaccountable.
It's amazing. They're doing like the officiating and then doing the opposite. It's kind of brilliant. They're almost saying like a very, very watered down version of what Gottfried says, which we'll get to later on.
Yes.
But they're really talking about like the therapeutizing, in that elected officials always get unelected technocrats to do the dirty work for them.
Yes. And then we get to, is this the out of the ashes?
Yes.
The priorities for reforming arm length government in the UK, which is the white paper of which the 2011 Public Bodies Act is drawn from, as far as I can tell.
It is.
Now, the 2011 Public Bodies Act was the act that you would think David Cameron, easily replaceable, would have attacked Ofcom with. But no, he didn't. If you read this white paper, I think if you search for it, there is one mention of Ofcom. And the mention of Ofcom is because Competition Market Authority and Ofwat are non-ministerial departments, while Ofcom, another economic regulator, is listed on the government's website as other. So the only issue with Ofcom is the semantic definition of what it actually is.
Yeah, they redefine it as no longer being a quango. They redefine it like the budget of office, budget of fiscal responsibility and things like that, is an independent body.
Mm.
So what they do is their whole thing, and this was a great kind of semantic trick at the time, their whole thing of the Conservative Party was they simply redefined in small legal terms what these bodies were.
Mm.
They did not change in function at all. Thank you for the £2 donation, though, Coney Current Year. Who was the UK Prime Minister between 2010 and 2016?
Tony Blair.
Of course. of course he was, but he was still Prime Minister.
It's clear evidence in the space in less than 2 years, the Tory government goes from, you know, Ofcom's an arm's length body, we shouldn't have, either we shouldn't have power over what it says, or we should have power to determine what it's, you know, all these different sort of interrelations of it. And instead, they come up with all these reforms for public bodies that doesn't talk about Ofcom. And actually, in the same year, they have the Postal Services Act.
Yes.
Which sees Ofcom take over the role and the remit of monitoring postal services in the UK.
Yep. They essentially become like the postal communications regulator.
Yep.
Which is a bizarre thing to kind of shove in there so late in the day, as postal communications at this point are in free fall and continue to be in free fall. But it's just another thing that is put under Ofcom's remit by an establishment who says that they want to axe its remit.
Coney Current, you were supposed to sound the Cameron alarm.
We don't have a Cameron alarm because he's so inconsequential. I don't know, we nominally have a glow watch, but only like a 5 out of 10 glow watch, I'm afraid. Ofcom is, like I said, meant to kill you with boredom. It is meant to be granular, boring, and it is meant to look like it isn't doing anything, whilst it's actually doing quite a lot.
And then we get on to
2015. Here we are.
This is 2015, but enacted in 2016, I believe.
Yeah, whilst David Cameron was still Prime Minister.
Ofcom to regulate services such as Channel 4's All 4, Sky's Now TV, which are previously overseen by the ATVOD, which is like the authority for the something.
Video on demand, yeah.
Yeah, authority something for the video on demand services or whatever. Yeah.
So they're once again, Ofcom has, within its remit, video on demand services, which means it technically regulates things like Netflix, but it doesn't.
Yes, I would actually be interested to see how long the ATVOD actually survived before it was eaten by Ofcom. It can't have been that long.
Let me have a quick look, actually. 5 years. It only existed for 5 years as a body until it was, I imagine it was made up to be eaten by Ofcom.
Exactly, I was thinking the very same there. But this is, again, another sign, slowly but surely, Ofcom no longer just deals with media and communications. It now begins to encompass online media.
Yes. It begins to creep into the online realm. Well, as its remit, you know, initially says, it is meant to be the arbiter of all communication in Britain.
Mm.
And it is meant to do this by boiling the frog, really. We can see how, in real terms here, over a decade, Ofcom has boiled the frog from being a consolidation of inefficient boards to promote business to being an example of unaccountable, unelected quangos in the rescue of David Cameron to being brought fully into the Tory fold with them basically just changing the head of Ofcom and making it their guy. And now it is brought into the realms of the Postal Service and is brought into the realms of online media streaming. It's a great work example as well of how these public bodies only ever grow in remit. You cannot trim them.
If we go back now to the Ofcom Wikipedia page, there's a bit actually I want to just read verbatim. This is on the Digital Economy Act 2017.
I don't know where that is.
Should be on the timeline. Yeah, there we go. The Digital Economy Act 2017.
Yep.
Ofcom were given powers concerning the minimum broadband speed provided by internet service providers, the ability to financially penalise communications providers for failing to comply with licence commitments, and the power to require public service broadcasters to include a minimum quantity of children's programming made in the United Kingdom. The Act also transferred to Ofcom the regulation of the BBC,
yes,
a duty previously undertaken by the BBC Trust, and updated the Ofcom Electronic Communications Code to make it easier for telecommunications companies to erect and extend mobile masts.
5G.
But the right in there is an admittance of such an obvious thing that we've now pointed out, that Ofcom was being set up to become a massive regulator both of terrestrial television and online broadcasting.
Yes, they mention as well here some of the online safety bill stuff, which we've covered in detail, because that's really where Ofcom came up the most.
Yes.
Is our coverage of the online safety bill. But we want to give you kind of a background of how we went from here to there, and how really it is just the next logical step for Ofcom to essentially arbitrate the digital realm in full.
Mm. But, and these last two paragraphs as well are just immensely interesting. Following a consultation over the online harms white paper, which I've discussed before, published by the UK government in April 2019, the government announced in February 2020 they intended to give Ofcom a greater role in internet regulation to protect users from harmful and illegal content, which is an admittance that Ofcom will probably be the people who declare what is harmful and illegal content.
Yes.
Because that seems to be one of the sticking points for getting the online safety bill now through Parliament, is that people don't want to come up with an agreement on what harmful and unharmful, illegal and illegal
the
content
argument
is.
Will be, and the argument is, that Ofcom has done this role
already.
Already, and has
already spent nearly two decades interpreting the Online Communications Act from 2003, which originally gave it its remit.
Yes, and if it can do something as important as, you know, regulate news programs, surely it can regulate something as, you know, as low key and as kind of low brow as social media.
Mm.
That will be the argument. The argument will be that Ofcom is 100% independent, 100% neutral, and 100% trustworthy. You have never, never heard in the news direct kind of condemnation of Ofcom's actions. It is seen from a news cycle point of view as a blameless, perfect organization.
Mm.
The ultimate light touch regulator. In fact, most of the coverage you'll see of Ofcom is asking it to go further.
Yeah.
They say that it has no teeth.
Look, yeah. July 2022, Ofcom received additional tools to prevent, identify and remove any content that depicts child sexual abuse and exploitation. Now, these are some of the things, again, we talked about in the online safety bill.
Yes.
Which is a unwritten backdoor into any device so that its screen could be monitored at any moment, just in case you might be looking at materials you shouldn't be. These tools will be introduced through an amendment to the online safety bill, which isn't even out yet really properly.
No.
Ofcom will be allowed to penalise those tech firms that do not comply, either by fines up to £18 million or 10% of the company's annual turnover, whichever amount is higher. Which is, again, another way to pretend that through PRISM we can't already do stuff
yes.
like that anyway.
We wanted to go through, when we went through the PRISM stream, we went through the amount of access and control that the UK and US government has in partnership over what is online and how you can communicate, who you can communicate with. They can see all of it transparently. We went through that in great detail during during the PRISM stream. But here we see really that the role of Ofcom is to suspect that everything is child pornography until proven otherwise.
Yes.
That is the way the amendment is worded. And it's funny this is being done in an amendment because it was already in the bill proper. This seems to be a performative strengthening of powers where powers already existed. It's a fig leaf, really, to try and reinforce the fact that it's for protecting children.
But through this whole timeline, it becomes clearly obvious that the Conservative Party has taken the weaponized bureaucracy that Blair put in place and put it towards their own sort of blue Blairism.
Yes.
And are using it for complete, utter narrative control by, you know, attacking any platform like BitChute, by working hand in hand with YouTube to come up with new standards and safety stuff, which we'll go over again in the coming weeks when we have our second part.
Well, there's a larger space for discussion here, which I'm going to leave, which is I don't want to torturously go over again a lot of the quotes we've done from Gottfried about the therapeutic state. If you want to learn what the therapeutic state is, watch our two. We've done two streams on the therapeutic state. So just search the channel, look for our therapeutic state streams. They're quite expansive, and they have pretty good work examples. But we have in Ofcom the ultimate kind of communications therapy, therapeutic body, in that they are able to arbitrate all of the ill supposedly brought forth by malcommunication. I know you had a good take on it earlier, in that they are really there to kind of reassure you in some ways, and that somebody is watching and that somebody is regulating, and that they will always be posited as I said earlier, like the light touch on your side, almost kind of like friendly granddad regulator.
They are on one side of the coin doing the important work that your mealy-mouthed, impolite politicians cannot bring themselves to agree to do.
No.
And on the other hand, when they do something wrong, they are the unelected, undemocratic institution that proves that democracy and debate in parliament is the only true way forward.
Well, once again, we have this body that's invented almost whole cloth by Blair, that is a complete consolidation of media and communications regulation in the UK, that is recognised as a body of ill by David Cameron before he's elected into Parliament. And then it is promptly expanded and folded into the power structure of the Conservative Party. And now we see it really being extolled as the cure.
I would suggest as well, I'm not where we're going to leave it till the last point, but the other week, not that one, the podcast thing.
Yes.
The other week, whilst I was sitting cooking, I listened to the Ofcom's own podcast, which you can only find the link through their site. It's
It's
unlisted
an
on
unlisted
YouTube.
video,
Yeah.
yes. But it's linked in our notes here that we will be
It
sharing.
shall be. But there is one point towards the end where one of the guys they have on is one of these sort of directory kind of people. He's not just a guy that sits and collects and reads, emails. Oh, they said something racist on Match of the Day or
Yeah.
whatever. He's the guy that's the decision maker. He sets the standards. He knocks up the white papers to send to producers and broadcasters. Like, this is the stuff you've got to hit this week. And he's talking about how they come up with these decisions. And he says, well, of course, there's three or four of us in the room. We can't just come up with a decision because that wouldn't be fair and that wouldn't be representative. So they engage in large amounts of polling against a public which they have already imbued with the ideas of diversity and equity and inclusion and pluralism and ask them, would you like more of these things?
Yeah.
Then they collate the results in a way that shows that the public would like more of these things. And then the three or four of them that started the survey questions, who didn't want to be undemocratic and unpluralistic, then just go and make the decisions they would have made otherwise. And he literally says this in the podcast. It's so just kind of like revealing to a
It's like,
certain
yeah, we
extent.
go out, we seek the information we want to hear. If we don't get it, we just make the decision anyway, is the tone of it.
Yeah.
And that it is the fake consent of the
Yeah.
populace.
We are going to do something, but it works a lot better for us if we can pretend that the public are on board and convince the public that they're on board whilst we do it.
Again, the way that Ofcom is being promoted, really, the way it is now being given something of a public face with, its podcast, its own kind of PR department, is to try and cushion the blow of the fact that it's going to start influencing the everyday lives of British people more and more. It is going to be making more and more decisions in terms of online content. It is going to be making more and more sanctions on bodies it does not like. And it is always, if you read, the history of Ofcom as we've gone through, it is always put forward as the reluctant regulator, that it is a requirement, that it needs to be there. Somebody needs to arbitrate communications in Britain. Otherwise, it'd be chaos. It very much reminds me of the stuff that I wrote in my Substack article on anti-politics, just about technocrats. It is a perfect, almost neutral technocratic body, in that it pretends it exists because if it doesn't exist, there'd be chaos. It pretends it doesn't want to exist.
Yes.
It pretends it doesn't want to censor. It pretends it doesn't want to arbitrate. It almost seems bored by its own power. If you read its statement, if you listen to this podcast, they kind of talk about that, about we're reluctant to do anything and sanction anyone. And it's a testament as well to how inside the establishment most British media, especially British broadcasting, is. There's been a very good job done in the development of television in the UK of only allowing an extremely select group of people to participate in that world. Much like Hollywood. There's only a very select group of people in British broadcasting.
And that's what I meant earlier on as well. There was a select group of people kept in control of British broadcasting so that it stayed a certain way.
Yes.
Then we had a select group of people implemented over the control of broadcasting in the UK so that it could be moved in another certain direction. And that's basically been the case since the late 70s, the early 80s, in one way or another.
Well, as you described, Ofcom really presided over the rise of pornography on British television.
Yep.
Before ready internet access, before ready broadband internet access, it was the kind of thin end of the wedge which allowed people to accept large amounts of pornography, basically in everyday life.
Yeah. Go read the section on abolition of Britain on television. I think it's the best thing Hitchens has ever written.
It is the best thing Hitchens has ever written.
And read that and then just don't look at his Twitter feed.
No, the Hitchens of, you know, abolition of Britain of 1997 to 2000 is not the Hitchens of now.
Mm.
He is unfortunately a diminished figure. But I would still recommend abolition of Britain.
One last thing you'd found from Political, I think this is literally from
there's the section here as well that I wanted to remind people of. This will more be kind of a preparatory reading assignment for people.
Yes, I think we'll probably have a better look through this next time as well.
We touched on it during our coverage of the online safety, but we couldn't do a dedicated, you know, half hour on Ofcom. It'd be too much. This will be covered on our next stream about Ofcom. This is more of just kind of to give an idea of how Ofcom developed and how it became the beast it is today. But this is really their roadmap to regulation.
The abolition of Hitchens.
Yes, it is. In which they go through, there's a nice kind of weird colour diagram in here, I remember. They go through this point of like just how much rulemaking.
Oh, there's the stakeholders.
Yeah. There's the rulemaking process. And all, you know, actions Ofcom will take. Published draft transparency notices and it's all quite dry and functionary, but what it adds up to is Ofcom just saying, we're going to triple in size.
Mm.
We are going to... There's almost like a note of panic in here. I don't know if it's deliberately performative or not, but Ofcom has essentially been handed a plate full of shit.
Mm.
They have been left in some ways, in reality, not just performatively, holding the bag. They are the ones who are going to have to find a way to turn the online safety bill into actual real-world action.
Mm.
And through putting people like, you know, Michael Grade, pornographer-in-chief, and Melanie Dawes, a career bureaucrat in charge of it, they're ensuring that their people are the ones who officiate this process. They are not putting this in the hands of the media kind of companies themselves. They're not putting this in the hands of the ISPs. They're putting this in the hands of a ostensibly political body that has been dormant in terms of its massive power. I would like to impress on you how powerful Ofcom is and how little of that power they currently use.
And how much powerful it's going to get. Yes. Sorry, how much more powerful it's going to get, I should say.
It's quite amazing to watch this because Ofcom has been able to accrue so much power because it hasn't been using it, or at least it hasn't been using it in visible ways. We always talk about how power wants to be seen, and that will come later, but sometimes power does not want to be seen.
Well, just look at the one set or the paragraph we've got there under this. Our current planning assumption is that the Online Safety Act will pass by early 2023. We expect our powers to come into force 2 months after royal assent. Once our powers come into force, we will publish a series of consultations on our approach to online safety regulation. We explain the timeline and focus for these documents below. Yeah. So, we're going to be given powers, once we've got the powers, we'll decide what we'll do with them.
Well, there's going to probably be some supplementary legislation that will probably take the form of a new, or at least amended, Communications Act.
Yes.
That will allow Ofcom to better exercise these powers. And once again, they will be given not only scope, but a legal duty to do so, just to make sure that if they decide to be, quote-unquote, light touch, it doesn't go too far out of what the politicians want. They will have a legal duty of care, which we talked about during the online safety bill stuff, basically to remove any material from the internet they find objectionable, which basically just means us in many ways. There's another quick one here as a kind of a lead-in for the next time we're able to stream about Ofcom, which is the fact that it's a body that includes about 1,000 people now. It's about to hire 400 more.
Yep.
Ofcom, an organisation of 1,000 people, is about to become an organisation of 1,400 people to prepare for the online safety bill.
Scroll down here.
Yeah.
The 300, Richard Ronca, says he's one of the lucky few who has been following the online safety bill since the beginning. The regulator's director of online safety has been at Ofcom since 2012.
Yeah.
And in the last 2 years has helped lead its hiring spree, recruiting 300 staff to get ready for enforcing the mammoth online safety bill. The most eye-catching has been Ofcom, Jill Whitehead, who has led Ofcom's online safety group from April. There are three teams in that group. God, they're just putting together so much stuff, aren't they?
Yeah.
Competing with big tech. Ofcom has hired ex-police officers, counter-terrorism and child abuse experts from the National Crime Agency, as well as staff from other regulators like the Information Commissioner's Office and Financial Conduct Authority. The regulator is also snapping up ex-big tech staffers to gain insight into how the firms it'll be policing think. It's been a learning curve for us, Ronca said. We've hired some really great people. I think the mission and excitement of what we do is a large part of
this. I love this little bit. The jobs market has turned against big tech in the last year, which Ronca says has made recruiting less... It's amazing that, isn't it? All of these ex-big tech staffers are ending up in the security services or within bodies like Ofcom. And I would say that this confluence of people, child abuse experts, yeah, that explains the current election. ex-police officers, counter-terrorism officers. It is exactly what we talked about. We talked about it during the social media fake and gay. Well, we talked about it during the Prism stream. We talked about it during quite a lot of what we've done, which is that these bodies, like Ofcom, like Facebook, like any of these companies, are just a confluence of government, of the security services, and of the technocracy. They have all three in them. And we see here an admission that Ofcom, through the online safety bill, is just becoming another arm of the security state, staffed by ex-security state people.
The section there, Colab.
Yeah.
Asked what approach Ofcom will take to enforcing the OSB, Ronca told us, there's no kind of blueprint or template that we can just copy and paste, he added. Our job is to provide clarity about what good looks like and to work with tech companies constructively to understand what approaches are effective, and that will sometimes be a more collaborative form of regulation than elsewhere. Public, private, partnership.
Well, it's all about... All of these people know each other. All of these people want the same thing. All of these people are working towards the same goal. They all effectively want what we have been describing since we did the democratization streams and before as the digital panopticon. This is the building of it. This is the bringing in of it. This is the staffing of it. These are the prison wardens. These are the people who may or may not be in the tower.
They are Agent Smith.
Yes, they are. And through hiring MI5, through hiring police officers, through hiring all these people, you end up with a cross-section of extreme regime loyalists staffing a body that will become the arbiter of what is and isn't an acceptable communication in any realm. And as we keep describing to people, the only real way to avoid this is to take things into the real world. The internet is about to become a much more hostile place for people like us. streams like this may in future become impossible. That's why we do things like Nomos. That's why, you know, we desperately try and tell people that the practical solution to all of this is to build real communities and become resilient.
Yes.
That is kind of our positive vision, our positive message out of all of these, and we try and extol that. But the reason we're talking about Ofcom is because of this last part. You have to understand where it's come from, you have to understand where it's going, and you have to understand the fact that they will never just announce the tyranny. It will always be the slow build, because that is the strategy that has allowed the current elite to survive.
What other better entity in our time and place for controlling the internet without accountability than one that makes sure that the standards of pluralism and equality are enforced?
Yes, and it will do so whilst pretending it is doing nothing.
Yep.
And you will very rarely see the actual fist raised. It is only done so in a very few cases. Like I say, I think the only breaching of cover from Ofcom has been BitChute, in which they were extremely quick, extremely vicious, and extremely decisive. It was almost kind of impressive to witness this body of niceties that, you know, within the media is posited as basically doing nothing and being a joke. Go out and, like, actually fuck someone's shit up because they had the temerity to be based in the UK.
Yep.
That's really what it comes from. That's really why I keep saying that founding media companies and things like that, especially in Britain, is a bad idea. All it does is invite the ire of someone like Ofcom. If you can be as unofficiated as possible, if you can be as basically guerrilla as possible, as we try to be with both these streams.
Yar, me hearty.
Yes, and what we do with the Nomos stuff and all of that, you basically have to fly under the radar by pretending you don't exist. That's really the only way to do it. As soon as you become a quote-unquote official body, it becomes quite difficult to operate. Those will have to exist. I'm not saying we shouldn't form organizations, but you have to be very careful how you separate out who does what.
As a closing statement for this evening's stream, yes, and the final conclusion, we aren't real.
No.
Good night.
Good night.